In the NFL, there is no margin for error. As you know, one mistake can change the outcome of an entire game. That's the same thing about your life and making sure you get the proper sleep so you get done in your day exactly what you want, because you're focused and you have everything in order. And the people who can help you do that are our friends at Sleep Number. Their mission is to provide the players of the NFL and you with data and insights to optimize your sleep for the ultimate competitive edge. Don't just take my word for it. How about 95% of the Los Angeles Rams? They've got a Sleep Number bed. 80% of the Kansas City Chiefs, they have a Sleep Number bed. 90% of the Vikings have a Sleep Number bed. You should have a Sleep Number bed. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70, just 10 numbers apart, but it means the world of difference because we can adjust our side of the bed to the exact firmness that we want and allows for working out or recovery. It's game-changing. So if you're in the market for a new bed, you should stop at a Sleep Number store right now. See your store or sleepnumber.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Progressive loves to help people make smart choices. That's why they offer a tool called Auto Quote Explorer that allows you to compare your Progressive car insurance quote with rates from other companies. So you save time on the research and can enjoy savings when you choose the best rate for you. Give it a try after this episode at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on the Roku Sports Channel from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
NBA playoffs is going to be amazing. It's too bad it takes 2.5 months.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Kick out in the corner, 3, Westbrook.
Steph out of bounds, 3 is up.
And he had it!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Here's Dante.
Fires at the buzzer and hits the 3.
Earlier on the show, quarterback coach John Beck. Coming up, Cardinals defensive end Calais Campbell. The Ringer NFL draft analyst Todd McShay, former NFL general manager Mike Mayock, and now it's Rich Eisen.
That's right, can confirm it, and here I am. Hey, I love doing that.
So dumb.
I don't know why. Like, it is so dumb to start it. I mean, certainly on the radio, people are like, "What are you talking about? I can't see it." So got the Roku channel.
We laugh every time.
Because you don't see it coming. At any rate, I'm here. You're there. Todd McShay of The Ringer is joining us. John Beck is just leaving the studio. Mike Mayock in hour number 3. This guy's one of my favorite human beings. I'm so psyched to chat with him because he's entering year 95 in the National Football League. I think I've gotten that correct,
record,
right? Is that right? Would it be? Calais Campbell here of the Arizona Cardinals once again. Good to see you, Calais. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm blessed and highly favored, man. Living the dream.
Come on, look at us chatting again. Come on. Who says you can't go home again, huh, Calais? Who says that, right?
Yeah, I don't know. They're wrong, though. You can definitely always come home. I mean, home is where the fun is.
Yeah, so is this year 18? Did I get that right? Is this going to be year 18 for you in the NFL?
Wow. Ooh, yeah, year 18.
Wow.
Year 18.
What a thought. I don't know. I just keep wanting to play football, and they keep letting me. So, one day I got to go home, but right now I'm enjoying it as much as I can.
And so it was the 2008 draft, 50th overall selection, and the Arizona Cardinals took you out of the U. Walk me through your memories of that draft. Here we are in draft week, Calais. What do you got for me there?
You know, I had a really bad combine. You know, I should have trained with you for the run.
Thank you.
Run.
Yes, sir.
Might have been a little better.
Nice.
But I had good training and stuff. I just kind of like, you know, mentally, whatever. I need to be humbled. And it happened. But then, like, leading up to the actual draft week, I wasn't sure if I was still going to be like a first-round pick like I was projected or if I was going to fall. Some people thought I might fall out of the draft completely. So it was a whole lot of uncertainty. And I was, you know, like, whatever, it is what it is. Like, we just got to ride with it and make the best of it. And back then, they had first and second day, the first and second round on day one, and then everything else was day two. And so I couldn't imagine having to like sit through now, because I fell out of the first round and going second round, and having that like that whole day go by probably would have sucked a little more. But for us, you know, when I got drafted, like it was still just a couple hours later after the first round, and you know, but once that call came in, like everything else went out the window. Like it didn't matter anymore about where you got drafted. It was like, okay, my dream's here. You know, my dreams are coming true. Got on the phone, you know, with all the you know, Rod Grace, the GM for the Cardinals at the time, Ken Whisenhunt, you know, got on the phone with Michael Bidwell. And it was just like, you know, like just the ultimate feeling, surreal. Like you couldn't even like even right now at this moment, I still get chills thinking about it, because you work so hard for something and then your dream comes true. And, you know, then you realize that's when the work really gets started. Everything up until the point really didn't matter no more. That's when the work really starts.
Right. And then now 18 seasons later, you're back with them. I mean, are you just blown away sometimes walking around the town, the city, the facility, just seeing the Cardinals logo behind you, that this is happening for you, Calais?
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I mean, you know, it's always a possibility, right? You know, that's why you never burn any bridges. That's not my personality anyway, but a lot of guys burn bridges or have, you know, you could. You don't want to do that though, because there's always a possibility you can come back. And so I know that the city has just been like on fire since the announcement came out. I trained here already, so when I'm in town, you know, guys are always like, hey, we miss you guys. You know, we miss you. We want you back. You know, and so now that I'm back, a lot of guys are like, I mean, literally everywhere I go, welcome back, man. I'm so happy to have you. You know, hope it's going to be a big year. And I'm like, you know, I think we got a shot. We got a chance. So, but it is surreal. It's incredible. This organization is the one that gave me my start first, believed in me, had 9 incredible years with the 2 championship games when most people didn't think we had a chance. You know, I was in the Super Bowl my rookie year, so my whole career started off with a bang, and I've been chasing that feeling again. And who knew? I didn't even think I'd be playing 18 years. Mm. You know, I thought I'd be done by now. So I'm surprising myself too. But at the end of the day, like, I love this game so much. I love it with all my heart. As long as they allow me to play, you know, and I'm still good at it, you know, like, why not?
Right. I mean, and you've done everything in your career, playing, as you said, in championship games and, you know, the Super Bowl. And, you know, in your first go round with Arizona and my buddy Kurt Warner. And now here you are trying to get back to the Super Bowl and win it. Walter Payton, Man of the Year, is also in your trophy case. For the lack of a better phrase, because it's more than just the trophy, clearly. Why do you keep doing it? Why do you want to keep doing it?
You know, I think about that all the time, because, like, you know, I got kids who require a lot of time. And so, like, you know, like, what's the point of going through the sacrifices, you know, losing time with them to really be good at this game that, you know, like, I mean, I've done enough where I could walk away and feel really good about my career. But when I think about it, it really comes down to, you know, the love of the game, right? Like, I love this game with all my heart. I started playing at 6 years old because, you know, I found out I could start playing. I asked my dad to sign me up, you know, and I mean, literally begged him, you know, and so I've always been in love with this football game. And, you know, eventually I do got to go home, but, you know, the reason why I keep going now is I feel like I got more to offer. You know, I got more to offer the game. You know, I can still be an impact player. I can still impact the locker room and helping these, you know, younger, talented, young men develop and grow their game. And, you know, I take pride in that, you know, just, you know, trying to give more to the game, make the game, you know, better than when it was handed to me when I was a young buck 18 years ago. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's part of it. It's a lot of other reasons, but that's the gist of it. You know, I just love it so much, and I want to make the game better. And so I feel like I still have a lot to offer it. And a lot of that is being a leader and helping the young guys develop. But even on the field, I feel like I can still, you know, shoot those gaps and make those TFLs and get sacks and batter balls and game-changing plays. So, you know, one day, you know, when I'm, you know, 20 years, 30 years down the road, and I'm looking back on my career, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, I should have retired a year earlier, because, you know, I just, I mean, look at this tape, it's terrible. And so I definitely don't want to suck at the game, but right now I feel like I can still ball.
Sir, you do not. I can confirm that you do not suck at the game. You're the exact opposite of sucking at the game. And I can say things like this. You don't have to even react to it. But years from now, we can look back and maybe talk about a jacket and a bust and things like that in a certain state in the Midwest of the United States of America. It is the truth, what you have been able to do in your career, Calais Campbell. And you are truly one of my favorites. Before I get to, you know, your current situation and maybe talk a little bit of the U, since Miami, maybe the first institution of higher learning, has a name called on Thursday night. I do want to ask you about Miami last year, Calais, and what happened prior to the home opener last year? Is that something that lingered with the team? That you just couldn't, that it hung over the team for weeks or months? Or that's not fair to say?
Yeah, I don't think that's fair to say. It definitely, you know, had a lingering feeling for a few weeks. Okay. But I don't think it was like, you know, enough of an impact to kind of justify like why we didn't play as good as we wanted to play early in the season. But, you know, that is a surreal feeling, right? You know, I mean, just on your way to work, you've done it, you know, so many times before, and you're pretty much at work, you know. And, you know, I'm driving in, you know, and I see, you know, like there's a little bit of, like, you know, just the road's blocked off. You're trying to figure out why, because it's never blocked off. And then you pull up and I see, you know, Tyreek in handcuffs, or, you know, get ready to put in handcuffs. And so I pull over like, oh, wow, this is a big deal. You know, and then obviously trying to, you know, help the best way I can, you know, let me be the handcuffs, which is even more surreal. You know, when you go to like that moment, you know, and like all the stuff that happened afterwards, because it's not just the moment, right? It's all the, you know, the media, the family, you know, everybody reaching out, talking about it, in the locker room, all the players trying to figure out what happened. You know, it definitely lingered way more than it should, but, you know, we did the best we could to kind of, you know, keep it at bay and keep the main thing. And, you know, but that was a very surreal thing. I mean, I've been, you know, playing this game a long time and driving to the stadium a long time. And that's definitely not something I ever thought could happen when you don't really break any rules, you know, but that's just the world we live in. But the beautiful thing is that, you know, we were able to get through it and still, you know, even though we started the year off kind of slow, I mean, we were 2-6 at the trade deadline. You know, we made the last game matter, and you know, I felt like that was it was definitely an opportunity to try to be the best leader I can be and try to keep everybody together. And you know, I think we did a decent job. I mean, you know, wish we'd have met the playoffs and made a run, but you know, finishing the year off strong was definitely something I can hang my hat on.
Yeah, you definitely won 6 of the last 9, but the 2-6 is what led me to ask that question to see if it was lingering or any sort of sense on that. Now you're in Arizona. I got to, you know, spend some time with Jonathan Gannon before a game against the Rams at the end of the season. He's contagious, man, in a good way. You know what I mean? Like, there's an energy about him that I think it's clear there's been a lot of buying of what he's been selling there in Arizona. I wonder what your 2 cents are on that as you're joining this organization with Kyler and a team that does appear to be on the upswing here, Calais.
Yeah, you know, before I ever met him, I've heard nothing but good things, right? You know, I try to keep a good pulse on the league, and I'm always talking to guys about, you know, how they feel about, you know, coordinators and sometimes even, you know, D-line coaches. And just different, you know, people that, you know, could potentially, you know, grow in this league. And it's not like I'm doing that to try to, like, you know, have, you know, information for when I'm a free agent or something. It just kind of happened that way. But,
sure,
you know, I definitely heard so many good things about, you know, Coach Gannon when he was in Philly. And then getting the head coaching job and guys that played for him here, they all loved him. And so when the opportunity came and we got on the phone together, like, I had a chance to see for myself. And he was very impressive, you know. It blew me out the water, you know, with just like the way you could tell he loves the game, his energy, his knowledge for how to, you know, get advantages in the game, especially on defense, the defensive line, you know. And so, you know, he said a lot of things I like to hear, which led to obviously me being here now. And I think together, you know, I mean, my goal is just to help him as best I can, put my hand in the pile and really just kind of, you know, help the, you know, maturity of the defensive side of the ball. Just young guys, a lot of talent everywhere. And I know that with my experience and just you know, my knowledge of the game, hopefully I can make a big impact here.
Before I send you on with the rest of your Monday, Calais, not to turn you into my draft expert, but I'm about to. I imagine you watched a lot of Cam Ward football when you had a chance, right? Playing in Miami, being a Hurricane yourself. A lot of questions about whether he is worthy of the first overall pick, Calais, and I'm wondering what your two cents are on that subject matter, Calais.
Oh, he's no question. You know, he's legit. You know, I mean, every young player, you know, has growth, right? You know, he's going to get a lot better the more he plays football. And some of his knocks, you know, some of the things that, you know, you don't like about his game, he also does things that's like, well, I mean, if you make plays like that, then hold the ball as long as you want to, you know?
Right, right.
He's incredibly talented, very smart, you know, hardworking, you know, I mean, everything I hear about the guy, you know, has been, you know, incredible things. Even before he got to Miami, when, you know, when he was trying to decide where he wanted to go, you know, I definitely, you know, I'm really connected with the Miami staff. And,
yes.
You know, they were telling me about him, and I was just like, wow, I mean, this guy sounds impressive. And then to see what he did, you know, the season, it made sense with all the stuff I was hearing. So I say, though, talent-wise, he can make every throw. You know, he knows where to go with the ball. He can throw on rhythm. He's a great creator. I mean, he's the ideal first-round pick, you know, first overall pick. Like, he's the kind of guy that you could build a franchise around. And, you know, he's got to teach him, you know, help him grow. But, I mean, yeah, like, it's football. Like, everybody gets better. There's very few people to come in, you know, day one and are, like, you know, the most polished players. You know, I don't care, even Micah Parsons or even, you know, Tyrann Mathieu, like, guys who I, you know, witnessed just come in right away and were super dominant. They still got better the more they played.
But I'm sure, again, you were watching as an alum. I don't know how many games you were able to make because clearly, you know, you had a Sunday job. But you were watching him last year thinking this is a professional quarterback with a monster ceiling. You were thinking that as a veteran of the game, as well as clearly an excited alum, Calais.
Yeah. No, and you know, I like to think of myself as like a diehard football fan that's lucky enough to play it. But I, just watching him and playing the GM role that a lot of us fans do, he's definitely a guy I would build my team around. You know, I mean, if I had the first pick in the draft this year, I'm drafting him.
Okay, Calais. You be well, sir. Good to see you. Best to your fam. I'm just psyched to see you back. You know, look at that, your smile on your face. You're 18. That is a massive accomplishment. Massive. 18 years in the National Football League and then be able to sort of bookend it. That's rare. I can't really recall somebody with an opportunity to do something like that. So I send my congrats to you on that front alone.
I appreciate that. It means a lot. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
You know how I feel about you. So take care of yourself. Let's connect soon. You be well.
Thanks.
That's the great Calais Campbell, yes, right here on the Rich Eisen Show from Arizona.
Man, you're 18.
To be able to
wild
go back to where you once belonged.
Super cool.
At this level as well. I have it here. Let me see. Let me get this right. That's 110 and a half sacks. That's the magic number.
It's a lot.
Regular season. And, you know, this is a guy who his rookie year, he goes to the Super Bowl. Got to get him back. With Kurt. Welcome to the pros. Yep. Let's go to the Super Bowl.
And that was a magical team.
Oh, my gosh. And he was part of the Jacksonville Jaguars that almost went to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And a couple of years with the Ravens, cup of coffee with Atlanta, then last year with Miami. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. When we come back, Todd McShay of The Ringer. In draft week, so much to talk about with him when we come back. Even the safest drivers still encounter unsafe conditions, so it's important they do it in a safe vehicle. And Hyundai's offer available class executive advanced safety features to help keep you protected against the many challenges the road throws your way. Basically, in a Hyundai, you can drive as safely as possible and enjoy your journey in confidence and style. When you change lanes, signal, check for traffic, and enjoy the added safety of Hyundai's available blind spot view monitor. constantly scan for dangers, and take advantage of Hyundai's standard forward collision avoidance assist to help prevent accidents by alerting you of imminent collisions and automatically applying the brakes. Stay alert at all times and be thankful that Hyundai's standard driver attention warning system monitors your attention levels and can bring your focus back on the road. Safety is all about making the right decisions on the road and when selecting a vehicle. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Progressive loves to help people make smart choices. That's why they offer a tool called Auto Quote Explorer that allows you to compare your Progressive car insurance quote with rates from other companies. So you save time on the research and can enjoy savings when you choose the best rate for you. Give it a try after this episode at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This episode is brought to you by Chevy Silverado. When it's time for you to ditch the blacktop and head off-road, do it in a truck that says no to nothing. The Chevy Silverado Trail Boss. Get the rugged capability of its Z71 suspension and 2-inch factory lift. Plus, impressive torque and towing capacity thanks to an available Duramax 3-liter turbo diesel engine. Where other trucks call it quits, you'll just be getting started. Visit Chevy.com to learn more.
So I played 11 years.
You did.
They have been to the Super Bowl 9 times.
Damn.
And I didn't get there once.
Right.
Think about that.
Right.
And I was one pick away from being drafted by the Patriots.
What happened?
The Chargers drafted
me. I know that's what happened. They didn't come up and get you.
So I went on a visit to the Patriots, and that's when Charlie Weiss was the offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And I go to Boston, and I really liked the visit. I like Charlie. I love Charlie Weiss.
Did you meet with Bill?
I did meet with Bill. You know, we sat in his office right above the stadium, right there where you're looking out at the stadium. And we really just sat there. We really didn't talk about much. We just looked at each other.
You know? What do you mean? We just kind of stared in each other's eyes,
you know, I guess.
So you're saying it was awkward?
You know how Bill is. There's only a few things he probably wants to know about you. And I guess he was trying to get a sense of, you know, was I passionate about football? As most coaches do. You're going to invest a first-round pick on a guy. You want to make sure they're passionate.
Do you think they would have chosen you if you were available?
Well, they said they were going to choose me. Charlie Weiss promised me if I was there at 6, because they needed a running back. They needed a running back bad that year. And so, when the Chargers drafted me, I think they took Richard Seymour.
Richard Seymour. Worked out there.
Have you ever brought up to Brady when you've seen him?
Never brought it up.
You could have been Robin, his Batman.
I always thought about, you know, what would that be like?
With all due respect to Antoine Smith.
I know. It would have been a little different. No way.
Yeah.
I'm kind of getting freaked out right now.
I love looking you in the face when he was telling that story in Atlanta at that Super Bowl years ago.
I was stunned.
Right?
Stunned.
But hey.
I mean, it worked out, obviously.
You know it's a great consolation prize? Richard Seymour?
Yeah.
Hall of Famer?
Yeah.
Either way, you're getting Hall
Multiple
of Famer.
Multiple Super Bowls.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show radio network, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com. We're just up by Christian in Toronto, Canada, wants to chime in here. What's up, Christian?
Adam, my wife.
How's it going? Is everyone doing good?
We're doing very well.
How are you?
NFL draft week. I'm fired up.
Can confirm. What's on your mind?
So, as a lifelong and rare Canadian Commanders fan, I had the privilege of watching the Bears game at the Hail Mary.
Okay.
And watching Caleb Williams and seeing the offseason that they've had, if they get Genty, is that a problem for the NFC? Is that
I think it's a problem for wherever Genty goes for the rest of everyone else. I mean, I think he is. I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school. I think he's going to
be like the other running backs that have been drafted top 10. I don't think that's got a – he's got bust written on him. I think he's got somebody who could be as significant as Bijan, or who knows. Obviously, Saquon's in that mix. He's the pinnacle of that. But if he goes to the Bears, that would mean the Bears, I'm imagining, sticking and picking, which means – the Raiders would take somebody else, which means maybe the Patriots take somebody else, and that would be somewhat surprising. Thanks for the call, Christian. Chiming in from Toronto. Chiming in right now from the Ringer, our friend is back here. Ladies and gentlemen, Todd McShay is back here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Let's go.
I guess, are you at Game of Thrones? What the hell is that behind you? Is that the Iron Throne behind you? Todd, what are you sitting? Where is this right
yeah,
now?
This is war this week, Rich. I'm in a hotel room.
Hey.
I'm in a hotel room. We got up to LA last night. Here all week doing our shows in the Ringer studios.
Right.
So I'm in a hotel room now. Jeez. Getting ready to jump in the car, drive an hour and a half for probably 20 miles to get to the studio.
Okay,
and,
very good.
And we'll be good to go. You know the deal.
I had no idea. Chris, where's the King's Landing Hotel here in Los Angeles? I have no idea where that is.
Great question.
My God. Okay.
Looking into it.
Okay. Do me a favor, not to geotag Todd McShay here. Okay, let's just jump into it. And what do you think is going to be the first surprise of this NFL draft, Todd McShay?
How about pick five? I mean, everyone has said Mason Graham for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And now I'm starting to hear we brought in Liam Cohen. We've got Trevor Lawrence. We're trying to – basically, Cohen was brought in to – fix Trevor Lawrence, if you will. Ashton Jeanty is a possibility there.
Mm-hmm.
The name I'm now hearing is Tet McMillan, the wide receiver from Arizona. And so I'll be honest, I have concerns with him. He's not my number one wide receiver. I've actually got a second round grade on him because of all the factors that and concerns I have. But you always try to put yourself inside like the brains of decision makers. And James Gladstone, his first draft. And for a while, we were all like, well, he drafted two shorter arm defensive tackles. And it worked out. Braden Fisk, 32 inches, and Kobe Turner, 31 inches. And they've been great in that Rams defensive line. He was part of that group with Les Snead. But, yeah, they drafted – that was like second, third round. I think you look back at the history of Trevor. His best years were 2018, 2019 at Clemson. He threw to 2 6-foot-4 wide receivers, right? In T. Higgins and Justin Ross. Those two guys in those 2 years combined had 4,000 receiving yards and 42 touchdown catches, okay? And now you think about it in Jacksonville. He's had a lot of smaller receivers, right? Not big catch radius. You know, you think about Christian Kirk, Calvin Ridley. So let's get him guys that he was most comfortable with. He's not been the most pinpoint accurate quarterback. And so maybe Tet McMillan makes sense. Even though I wouldn't take him there, you always try to figure out the why. I think that would be the why if Tet McMillan surprises me, and I think surprised a lot of people to go that high in this year's draft. And I can tell you this, the Jets, the Raiders, all the teams that are looking for defensive linemen behind them, and there's a lot of them between picks like 6 and 17, they'd be thrilled with that.
So I was just to ask you if that stone does get thrown into the draft pond by the Jaguars, what the ripple effect would be, and if it's if
well, what if
what do you
let
think?
Me jump you here on this one. What if Ashton Jeanty then doesn't go to the Raiders like everyone's mocked? I had an interesting conversation with the GM the other day, and he's like, "Stop being so narrow-minded with your thinking, like everybody else seems to be right now." Think about it kind of outside the box. And I think he very specifically was kind of talking about that range of the draft. And also, you know, we're plugging the same names in with the same teams. It's always been Graham 5 to Jacksonville. It's always been Jeanty 6 to the Raiders, right? What if it's not? How does this thing look? Start to think like that. And then I got more information. I'm starting to kind of piece it all together. Jeanty doesn't go there because here's the deal. The offensive tackles aren't great, but teams are in such desperate need that they're not going to wind up going that high. Edge rushers, to me, in all the conversations I had in the last 72 hours, Rich, these edge rushers are going a lot higher than you think. And I think it could start with at number 6 with the Raiders. I think edge and offensive tackle are in play there. At 7 with the Jets, everyone's been talking about Tyler Warren, he's in play. But if the right edge rusher's there, I've heard Jahdae Barron as a possibility. This is an Aaron Glenn team. But then after that, I think it's going to be a real run on these edge guys. I think Mykel Williams is going a lot higher than people think. I think you start to get to that 8-9 range, and there's a real possibility there. I think James Pierce could go as high as 15, the Tennessee edge rusher. There's some red flags with him. I think Atlanta could take him at 15. I think in between, Shamar Stewart, a lot of teams don't like him, don't like the agent, don't like the lack of production, but there's some teams that are bullish on Shamar Stewart. So these edge rushers are going to come off the board quickly. And if and all of a sudden, if we see a Tet McMillan in the mix, that bumps that could bump down defensive linemen. Where does Mason Graham wind up going? And then the team that could benefit from all of this, if it winds up playing out that Jinty doesn't go six and Tet McMillan goes five, how about the Bears sitting at 10, Rich? I mean, could they – even 72 hours ago, I don't think anyone in that office would have thought we could be looking at a scenario where we've got Tyler Warren and Ashton Jinty that we have to choose from at number 10, right? Like, this is going to be fun, man.
No way.
That's no no doubt.
Wow.
Todd McShay here on the Rich Eisen Show, zooming in from Bill Simmons' King of the North Lodge here in Los Angeles, California. So where do you got Shador landing 3 days before the draft? Where do you got him landing?
It's been a lot of fun having those conversations because nobody seems to specifically know. What I've been told is there's a little bit more love in the Giants building on the personnel side, the scouting department, the coaching staff, not so much. What I understand is this last push, like how about them jumping and grabbing that private plane, the Mara family private plane, and it's Boulder on Thursday, Tuscaloosa on Friday, then over to Louisville on Saturday. And everyone was like, wait, they're going to work out Shador. I think what got lost in all the messaging and the news is, well, they also worked out Milroe and they worked out Shuck. This was about the second wave of quarterbacks, is my feeling. Now, again, there are still some people in that building that are, from what I'm hearing, kind of pushing for, or at least being like, we need to consider Shador at three. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be Abdul Carter at three. So now it's fascinating because the most recent information I'm getting, Mike Tomlin does like Shador Sanders. I think that I thought that it was like, that's the floor. I think it's a softer floor than people might think, though, at Pittsburgh. I've been told it might not even be 50% chance that they take him at 21. And I've also been told, hey, this is an organization. They don't have a second round pick because of the DK Metcalf trade. Maybe they're a team that would want to kind of dangle it and trade back. But who's going to trade up? I don't, my information is, I don't think Cleveland's going to trade back up for Shador. I don't know that Cleveland's even going to trade back into the first round. I think all these teams are looking at it saying, are all these guys going to fall? Is Jackson Dart going to be available at 33, 34? Is Shador going to be available at 33, 34? So it's going to be a fascinating night. There's going to be a lot of speculation and rumors, I'm sure, in the next 72 hours. But as of right now, I can't say firmly that there's a floor. The closest thing we have is still Pittsburgh. But that's not a lock, according to what people are saying. And honestly, the conversations I'm having, there's more talk about where do we have to go up in the 20s to get Jackson Dart than there is about there's one or two teams that are buying. I think New Orleans more interested in Dart. I think maybe the coaching staff for the Giants could be more interested in Dart. And so if that's the case, it may be more of a sweepstakes to get in that 20s range. Maybe Minnesota, only the fewest picks of any team in the NFL this year, 4 picks. Maybe Minnesota's a team that could trade back out in the middle of the 20s for a team looking to move up to go get Dart like New Orleans or the Giants. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Like you on that desk, Shador's still sitting at home or wherever he's going to be. Jackson Dart accepted his invitation. Now he's rescinded it. He's not going to be there in Green Bay. So it's going to be a lot of fun trying to figure out where these quarterbacks go, as always is the case. But this year is going to be kind of wild.
The team that is not quarterback needy that will take a quarterback in this year's draft is Todd McShay. Which one?
I could see Miami at some point. I think the Jets are in the market, but I think more third, fourth round. Okay. I think the Rams at the right quarterback at the right spot, day two, maybe early day three. I think we're going to see, obviously, Ward go one. Then I think somewhere in the mid-20s, we'll see that second quarterback come off the board. I'd bet the under on 2.5 in quarterbacks at this moment in the first round. Then I think we've got 33, Cleveland, 34, Giants, 40, New Orleans, whichever of those teams doesn't trade up. I think you could see a couple quarterbacks go in that range. Then I think we're going to go a while on Friday night, you know, but pick 41 towards the very end. Maybe a team takes one of those third tier quarterbacks. And Milroe is obviously the wild card. He's going to go on day two, according to everyone I talk to. I don't know where that landing spot is. But then I think you get into that Will Howard, Riley Leonard, McCord from Syracuse. I think those guys will be probably Saturday guys, but I think one of them maybe could sneak into that late third round range. Maybe it's Chip Kelly with the Raiders late on day two.
For Howard, because he had a front row seat.
For Howard, sorry. Yes,
got
exactly.
It. Okay. Todd McShay
knows
here.
The language, sure. Has trust in him, all those things.
Yep. Todd McShay of The Ringer, the McShay Show right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, there's so many different ways to go here. So let me go with you on this front. The Tennessee Titans, let's just say, wave a wand and say there is still a discussion in that building about the first overall pick. Somebody calls you up, Todd McShay, and says, listen, we studied the crap out of Cam Ward. You know, we like everything about him, including the way he plays Twitch and on Twitch, you know, plays Fortnite, okay? And they've studied it all. But there's somebody in the room there pounding the table for Travis Hunter, and they ask you, Todd McShay, advice. What should we do with the number one overall pick? Your answer would be what?
What should we do?
Yeah.
I think you take Cam Ward. You have an opportunity. I think the traits are there. You have a head coach in Callahan who's been around. I mean, he's been around Peyton Manning and Matthew Stafford. Joe Burrow. Like he's been around guys and knows how to develop them. And now you've got this clay, if you will, a quarterback who's got great instincts in the pocket. Even though he's relaxed and he's kind of just hanging out there sometimes. If you can channel his instincts, channel his ability, if you just go and look at the clip reel of him when he's on time, in rhythm, receiver making his breaks, back foot drop, he's an absolute assassin in the pocket in those moments. But they're kind of, you know, it's mixed in with a lot of the hanging around in the pocket, waiting for rushers to come, last second, you know, making a move, extending plays, arm angles, all those things are great. And you can't suppress them, but you need to channel all the things he does, you know, in the confines or the constructs of the offense. So I would take Cam Ward at one at this point. I truly would. You've got to have the quarterback or else nothing else matters. And so this would be my swing at it. And I think Cam Ward has the right tools and you have a coach that can help develop them.
But Travis Hunter is number one on your draft board, is he not?
He is, but he's not a quarterback.
Yet.
You're always trying to stir things up, Rich. I mean,
yet.
Here we are, 72 up. There's only one certainty in this entire draft, and that's Cam Ward's going one. And we're gonna sit here and chip away at this.
The number one certainty in this draft is Travis Hunter. He's certain, don't you think? I mean, tell me what's uncertain about him. What, that he's going to try to bite off too much, and thus he's good at none? Because he's trying to be great at two? Really? I don't know about that one, man. I
love him. I feel like you're trying to wedge me in a corner that I don't love Trev. Like,
I'm not wedging you
not
anything. I'm talking about the way I feel. That's a YP, not
do,
an MP,
what
Todd.
Would you do?
What would I do? I would. Yes. I don't know. Listen, because I'm not a tape head, okay? I'm not an all 22. I'm not grinding tape. I'm just not. So,
here's the problem,
you know,
with Travis. Here's the problem. I can't love him any more than I do.
Right.
I mean, he's absolutely special. I think the thing that goes kind of overlooked because he's so great with the ball in his hands and the athleticism, the foot quickness and what he can do on both sides, he might have the best ball skills in the last decade of wide receivers coming out. Like everything in his zip code, he's catching. So I love everything about it, but let me ask you this question.
Sure.
Who's getting him the football?
No, I totally understand that. I get it. So who's getting him the football? I don't know. I mean, Cousins is sitting out there. You could flip draft capital for him. I understand he's late in his career, but you know, there's that option. I guess they're done with Will Levis. You know what I mean? Like plus you can team him up with L'Jarius Sneed when he's not teamed up with Calvin Ridley. You know what I mean? Like what are we thinking? To me, it's
More fascinated. Like you're telling me if Jenty goes 10, now Tyler Warren and Loveland could still be on the board.
Sure. You know, I mean, like these things are out there, but I'm just talking about the Tennessee Titans. You want to be relevant. You want to win. Obviously, wins before relevance. I understand that. I don't know, man. I mean, I'm glued to Tennessee Titans games either way, but I'm just wondering if the casual fan is just curious to see what Travis Hunter looks like and just what does a two-way player in the 21st century look like and how's that going to be? And, you know, you want to shut down Nico Collins and outscore C.J. Stroud. That's one way to do it. I understand who's getting him the football. That could be a question for another day. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here.
A question for another day.
Yeah. Another day. That could be a question for another day. It could be a question for Friday. Could be a question for Saturday. It could be a question for 2026 if you believe in the coaching staff and you want to build. It could be a question for later in the summer if Kirk Cousins is like screaming, get me out of here. You know, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm throwing that in all directions, Todd. You know,
you're just trying to make that first pick fascinating. You're 10 minutes on the clock.
I don't know, but last one for you, Todd. The player that if a GM says I've got to emerge from the draft with this guy, who's that player for you? A GM's like, give me a name of a guy that I need to come out of this draft with, regardless of need. Who's that player for you, Todd McShay?
I'm absolutely in love with Jahdae Barrett. I think he's one of those guys that make the 10 other defensive players do their job and let him go get the football. Let him disrupt. Let him make plays in the run and the pass game. Line him up in the A gap is off the ball linebacker. Line him up at nickel. Line him out wide. I'm hearing now, like I said, he could be in play at 7 for the New York Jets. But then after that, it's like, where is he going to fall to the 20s? I just think he ran a good 40. He's got shorter arms. He doesn't fit the prototype. We've been saying this about Brian Branch and Petrie and Sanders Strill. These guys are difference makers. And if everyone else is doing their job, they make huge impact plays. And I think Jahdae Barron is going to be a guy that comes in the NFL wherever he's drafted. And he's going to be an impact player. And if he doesn't go in that top 10, people are going to say, just like they've said with Branch, just like they've said with all these other guys, man, they should have gone earlier. I think Barron's one of those guys.
Okay. What are you doing this week for people to follow you during this draft week for The Ringer? Hit me with
live show. Okay. We're competing with you. Live show. We can have NFL Network on one of the big screens. Yes. And the McShay Show right next to it.
Okay.
We're doing a live show coming on an hour before the draft. We'll be on the whole first night. The whole second round review show after. And then Saturday, we're actually invading Russillo's house here in Manhattan Beach. I'm eating his food. I'm drinking his drink. Yeah, we're taking over. He's got this big man cave down here. So I called him. I texted him. I gave him the town line. I said, we're gonna go do something. You can never talk about it. We might have to hurt somebody. All I need you to do is say whose car are we taking. And he was all for it. So we're taking over his place Saturday. We're going to do a 2-hour live show during the third day of the draft.
That's awesome. And everybody can check that out on The Ringer and the McShay Show podcast. Todd, you're awesome, man. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the 2 cents. And look for my call next week. Let's chop it up once we know what actually happens.
Brother. I love that. All right. Talk to you soon, bud.
That's Todd McShay of The Ringer. Check him out right there. He knows that I come out of the smoke on Thursday night. I mean, if we're really going to. That was a very Game of Thrones type way to end it right there.
I was going to say Radisson by Blair Witch.
Is that what you said?
Chaos is a ladder.
Very good. We talked about it on the Overreaction Monday pod as well. That's what I'm pounding the table for Travis Hunter as much as I can.
I get it. You're doing
and
the best.
And you're like, why not go with him and Kirk Cousins? Pair them together.
By the way, Aaron Rodgers hasn't signed anywhere, right?
Yeah, oh, I don't know if he's going to.
Doesn't he live in Nashville? So
I understand that, but that's, I mean.
What's the difference?
Between Tennessee and Pittsburgh, really? About the ability to win a championship before you really hang out on the beach?
Easier division?
Come on.
AFC South?
Okay. Oh, is it really?
Then the NFC, then the AFC North?
Excuse me. I understand the AFC North is tough, right? The Texans can put it on people, pal. You saw it. Ask our neighbors across the way how they enjoyed a taste of the Texans in the wild card round.
I mean,
Herbert wasn't
going great for most of last year.
I understand that. Herbert was horizontal more than vertical.
Agreed.
Chefs, 24 culinary showdowns for 24 hours straight. Which chef will outcook, outpace, outlast the competition?
No chef
escapes the clock. Season premiere 24 and 24, Last Chef Standing, Sunday, April 27th at 8. See it first on Food Network. Stream next day on Max.
Out here, there's no one way of doing things. No unwritten rules. And no shortage of adventure. Because out here, the only requirement is having fun. Bank of America invites kids 6 to 18 to golf with us. For a limited time, sign them up for a free one-year membership, giving them access to discounted tee times at thousands of courses. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/golfwithus. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America. Restrictions apply. See bofa.com/golfwithus for complete details. Copyright 2025 Bank of America Corporation.
Let's start with Bobby Boucher, and we'll put our own Rich Eisen Show draft profile up.
Boucher primarily lines up as an off-the-ball linebacker. However, they will use him off the edge in some obvious passing situations. Against the run, he's very aggressive to fill and attack blockers. Doesn't use his hands to shed, preferring to simply lower his shoulder and power through blocks. Has the range to make plays sideline to sideline. He's an outstanding blitzer, showing timing burst and a violent finish.
Yep.
He will need to abandon the drop kick at the next level. I don't see him being the primary signal caller or communicator, but his play instincts are exceptional. Overall, Boucher plays a lot bigger than his size. Should be an immediate impact player on day one.
Wow. Interesting. Moving on to Johnny Utah. Quarterback of the Ohio State University.
Utah's a wild card in this draft, doesn't have a lot of film. Has average athleticism and an awkward three-quarter left-handed delivery. His best traits are his toughness and competitiveness.
Yeah.
Never gives up on a play. He'll fight for every yard as a runner. He's a little too high on the board for me right now.
Okay.
He's got to go down. It's got to be that way. I would consider hiring him after his playing days are over. He could have a long career associated with the game, either an outstanding coach, a prominent scout, or a special agent.
Okay, next up, Willie Beeman, quarterback, University of Houston.
Sure. Beeman, a little bit of a late bloomer. He's originally a seventh-round pick, bounced around to four different teams. He's since settled in and emerged as a dangerous playmaker as both a passer and a runner. He's at his best when the play breaks down, using that athleticism to extend plays while keeping his eyes downfield. His immaturity is an issue, and I believe there is something to the rumors about his poor relationship with his star running back. I think it's important for his coaches to understand how to best use his skill set. The lack of RPOs is a major mistake. He'll excel in the right system and should emerge as the best player in the league. He's my number one player.
Wow! Last one, I'll be honest with you, I'm partial. One of the greatest kick returners I've ever seen from Alabama, Forrest Gump.
Gump is a dynamic kick returner for the Crimson Tide. He's made an impact in plays in every game that I studied. He's the definition of straight line fast. Lacks elusiveness and make missability, but it doesn't seem to matter. He gets up to top speed immediately and destroys pursuit angles. I like to see him involved in the offense because I believe his speed would play well on jet sweeps, reverses, and vertical takeoff routes. The trainers told me that he's had some durability issues as a young kid, but they haven't had any issues at Alabama. The head coach worries about his ability to learn and grasp concepts. He even actually referred to him as a stupid SOB when he was talking to me.
Right.
I wouldn't be ping-ponging him back and forth between positions. He'll be a good soldier, provided you surround him with a good lieutenant, and I'd be shot in the butt to draft this kid.
Daniel Jeremiah!
Well
this
done.
This is why we DJ. Called you, DJ. God, I love that, man.
That's 4.5 years old.
Is it?
Yeah, November 2020.
It stands up, man.
The test of time. Perfect button. Shot in the butt to draft him.
He's ping-ponging back and forth. Showed that movie to Zan the other day.
Forrest Gump? And?
To a 16-year-old. He loved it. There were tons of references that just he didn't get.
Yeah. It's a long one, too.
It's a long movie. Keep his attention.
It did.
Did?
It did. Right. You know, obviously, it's still an incredible movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know...
He doesn't know
the LBJ stuff.
Yeah, he didn't know that. You know Richard Nixon, he didn't know any of those guys.
I mean, he kind of knows about the politics of the Vietnam War.
Okay. Watergate.
The soundtrack kind of went over his head.
Soundtrack's maybe the best part of the movie.
I know that. For us.
Oh, for us. You know. I remember getting the Forrest Gump soundtrack. It was a double CD back then.
Oh, yeah, bro.
Big purchase.
Oh, yeah. I remember the Saturday Night Fever 8-track.
Yeah.
Okay. Hyundai, everybody, every Hyundai offers available class exclusive advanced safety features that can alert you to potential dangers around you. So Hyundai is a spectacular way to make sure the road doesn't get you, because they're always ensuring that it doesn't at Hyundai, which has got over 130 IIHS top safety awards since 2006. And that includes top safety pick and top safety pick and awards to Hyundai vehicles from 2006 to 2025. All right. I saw something at a baseball game I've never seen before in my entire life. Now, we have seen no hitters broken up in the eighth inning before. We have seen no hitters stand the test of near base hits and spectacular web gems on defense keep a no-hitter alive. We've seen no-hitters not completed because pitch count gets too high. Certainly when pitch count gets too high in April. So, hey, manager decides, we're gonna play the long game here.
Wasn't it Clayton Kershaw a couple years ago?
Oh,
a perfect
yeah.
game. Through.
Last year, Max Fried had a no-hitter against the Mets in April, and his pitch count got high, and Brian Snitker took him out.
Yep.
And the closer, I think Iglesias, gave up the no-hitter, the combined no-hitter, which you think is not really a no-hitter. You know,
it's not a real no-hitter.
Right?
No.
So we've seen all of it. And Max Fried was on the mound with a high pitch count in the eighth inning yesterday. And he lost the no-hitter before he threw a pitch in the eighth inning. And you're saying, what the hell is that? Because the official score in Steinbrenner Field in Tampa, Florida, decided an error, as he ruled it in the sixth inning, was really a hit. And we come back from a commercial break. I'm staying tuned to see, are the Yankees going to let him pitch? And Freed's on the mound, and Michael Kay is flabbergasted because the official score, who knew, by ruling a Paul Goldschmidt error in the sixth inning, had his finger on that chess piece the entire time throughout the entire seventh inning and removed it in the middle of the eighth. And, oh, we come back from break, and the no-hitter's broken up by the official score. I've never seen anything like that in my entire life. It's like, hey, bro, if it was an error in the sixth, how is it a hit in the eighth when there's a no-hitter? Now, the Goldschmidt boot was against this kid, Chandler Simpson, that had come up for the Rays over the weekend. He's really speedy. Had he gloved it, it would have been a tough play, probably a hit, but you ruled it an error. And we go through the entire seventh thinking there's a no-hit bid. And now there isn't because you decided against it? On second thought, no-hitter. Unconscionable. So here's my fix. Because I always give you a fix.
It is a pretty big boot. I mean, it looked like it should have been a routine play.
No. This kid Simpson is lightning fast. I don't think Fried would have gotten over to first, but who knows?
It does not look like Fried would have made it.
So you could have ruled it a hit at the time.
Right.
But maybe it's because I'm not ruling that the first hit of the game until an inning and a half later?
Is the official score allowed to look at film or anything?
I don't know what the hell happened.
The Yankee broadcast didn't offer any type of.
We don't have any. They were like, they've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And Kay's been to more baseball games than I have.
Right.
Here's the fix. Major League Baseball needs to centralize official scoring. You remember the NFL used to have a replay official in each stadium for each team?
Mm-hmm.
It used to be local folks making a decision of national and potentially international importance on a replay. Oh, we go under the hood and the ref would speak to some person upstairs who ordinarily was a peer. I know of a good friend of mine, and I'll call him that. I've known him for a long time. He's a good dude. He's a PR man during the week, and then the replay official for the Chargers on the game day. So it was all different, and the NFL's like, we're going to localize this thing. We're going to, you know, centralize this thing. And so now all of the replays come out of New York, just like it does in Major League Baseball. So why don't we have whoever is reviewing games whenever there's a buzz or a moment where we're going to not keep the game going, we're going to review. How about that person is an official scorer too? And they official score the game from Major League Baseball. I mean, it's antiquated to just have some local person call official score the game, because you know, if that was a Ray throwing a no-hitter, they wouldn't have changed that to a hit in the eighth inning. They would have kept it in error. You know it. We all know it. And the same thing would happen in Yankee Stadium too, or Fenway Park, or Dodger Stadium. Sure. There's always a home field official scorer thumb on the scale. Enough of that. That was absurd. I've never seen anything like that. Oh, and replay's not perfect either, because Aaron Judge hit a home run. And they called that foul with the naked eye. And I will show you in this commercial break.
I've seen it. Okay. I don't know how you rule that foul.
Oh, yeah. Good Lord. What a day in Tampa. Yeah.
If your job at a healthcare facility includes disinfecting against viruses, you know prevention is the best medicine. And maintaining healthy spaces starts with a healthy cleaning routine. Grainger's world-class supply chain helps ensure you have the quality products you need when you need them. From disinfectants and cleaning supplies to personal protective equipment, so you can help deliver a clean bill of health. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.